Exodus chapter 20, and appreciated the songs that Robert led for us before the lesson, thinking about God's praises and who he is. This wasn't intentional, because I don't think he knew what I was going to be talking about, but I think that last song was a very good one for us to prep our minds, thinking about our subject tonight. We're talking about the Ten Commandments, and God delivered the Ten Commandments to Israel at the Mount called Sinai, and they literally stood in awe of God's greatness. And so, as we think about God speaking these commandments to his people, they were quaking because of God's greatness and his awesome power seen here. So I've been thinking about the Ten Commandments lately, and I don't know why, what particular thing has got me thinking about it, but I don't know if it's conversations that have come up or maybe comments that we've made in Bible class that have referred to the Ten Commandments. But I've been thinking about the Ten Commandments, and in particular, the place that they have in our lives as Christians. And so tonight, what I want us to think about is, first of all, how important the Ten Commandments should have been to the Israelites, how important the Ten Commandments were to their covenant with God as kind of the foundation for their relationship with God. Then I want us to think about the place of the Ten Commandments in our lives today. Of course, we are not Israelites. We're not under the old covenant any longer. But I think the Ten Commandments still have relevance for us today. So we'll talk about that. But let's just begin by reading this passage. We'll begin in verse 1 and read down to verse 17. So Exodus chapter 20, verse 1. Then God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, or any likeness of what is in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, inflicting the punishment of the fathers on the children, on the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing favor to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. For 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male slave or your female slave, or your cattle, or your resident who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and everything that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. For that reason, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be prolonged on the land which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male slave, or his female slave, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. So a couple of decades ago, there was a pretty big political push to remove the Ten Commandments from public places like government buildings and government squares and school classrooms. And it seems to me that part of the push for that was to draw a large separation between religion and non-religious secular public life. We're going to take religion out of public life. And my point in bringing that up is not to say anything about the political things behind that. I don't even think that, you know, putting the Ten Commandments back in schools would really do a whole lot without actually putting them on our hearts. But my point is that the way people tend to read the Ten Commandments is that they are just religious laws, that they're pushing a certain religion. And I think that's not the way God was intending for us to read these. Yes, they are religious. Yes, they point us to one God. He is a singular God, and he is a God who expects us to worship him and only him. But they're not just religious. These are rules and guidelines and commandments for just living a good life. They're basic instructions for how we ought to live. So, I mean, how many people understand that it's important that we respect our parents, honor your father and your mother? How many people understand you shall not murder? I mean, that's one of those basic givens in life that's just a fundamental thing of morality. So I want to look at the Ten Commandments tonight as rules for life, basic rules for how we ought to live. Certainly that's what they were for Israel. So let's begin by thinking about the Ten Commandments and Israel. Think about how important they were. What does God do? How does God communicate to them just how important these commandments are? This is the very first thing God is saying to Israel that they need to keep before giving them anything else in the covenant. You remember, God has brought them out of Egypt. They're at Mount Sinai. Look at Exodus chapter 19, verses 4 through 6. This is God's instructions to them and kind of explaining to them what's about to happen at Mount Sinai. He says, this is Exodus 19, verse 4, "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel." So God says, you're my people. You're my special people. I've brought you out of Egypt to make you my people. And he tells them to get ready. In 3 days, he's going to appear before them on the mountain. And when he does, the first thing he says to them is he speaks these Ten Commandments. The very first thing that God says to them is, I am the Lord your God. This is who I am. I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. Because of that, this is what you need to do in response. And so before even talking about sacrifice, before telling them you need to build the tabernacle, before telling them you need to build the Ark of the Covenant and everything that's going to go in the tabernacle, he tells them, this is what I want you to do. This is the foundation. This is the very bedrock of their relationship with God. Not only that, but God himself spoke these words. I don't know why, but I don't think I ever realized that until not long ago. I did a lesson that was kind of about the Ten Commandments, and that we've come to the mount that's greater, Zion. And one of the things that I learned is that God verbally spoke these words to Israel with his own voice. He wasn't using Moses' voice. He wasn't speaking through a prophet or a mediator. The Lord, in verse 1, spoke all these words, saying, you know, they're hearing God's voice. Imagine that. Imagine hearing God's booming voice from the mountain. And in verse 18, it made a big impression on them. And all the people were watching and hearing the thunder and the lightning flashes and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it all, they trembled and stood at a distance. And they said to Moses, speak to us yourself and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us or we will die. So God saw fit to himself speak these words to the people, to impress upon them just how important these commands were to them. And these commands were to be remembered. In fact, what did God do with these commandments? He wrote them on tablets of stone. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 10. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, this is Moses repeating the things that happened at Mount Sinai to the second generation of Israelites before they enter into the promised land. And Deuteronomy 10, verse 1, at that time the Lord said to me, cut out for yourself two tablets of stone like the first two, and come up on the mountain and make an ark of wood for yourself. Then I will write on the tablets the words that were on the first tablets that you smashed to pieces, and you shall put them in the ark. So remember, Moses goes up on the mountain, and he receives these tablets that God has written the Ten Commandments on, and he goes back down to the people, and they're worshiping the golden calf. And he throws the tablets down at the foot of the mountain, and they smash. That wasn't just Moses acting rashly. That was a symbolic event showing that they have literally broken God's commandments, the very ones that God has just spoken to them verbally from his own mouth. They have broken them, and so these The pieces of the covenant are there at the foot of the mountain as they have rejected God. And so God says, I want you to, as he renews this covenant, I want you to make two more tablets. And I want you to bring them up here. I'm going to again write on them. And God says to him, I want you to put them in the Ark of the Covenant. Now, when we think about the two tablets, usually we tend to, like when we see pictures and stuff or visualize them, we have a tablet of five commandments and a tablet of five commandments. Most likely that was not what it actually was like. Most likely there were two copies of the Ten Commandments. So 10 commandments on one tablet and 10 on another tablet. And the reason for that is because treaties in the ancient Near East at that time, that's the way covenants were made. You would write everything down on one tablet, and then you make a copy of it on another tablet, the exact copy, and one party would keep one copy, and the other party would keep the other. It was a sign of that mutual agreement that this is the agreement between us. So probably that's what God is saying here. You've got your copy of the Ten Commandments, and I've got my copy of the Ten Commandments, so we both understand this is what you're expected to do. And they're to place this in the Ark of the Covenant. Why in the Ark of the Covenant? The Ark of the Covenant represented God's presence among the people. It was there in the most holy place. And it was where God met with Moses, and was where God would meet with the priest once a year. And it was placed, these tablets were placed in the Ark, not as a relic, but as something to remember. Not as some historical thing that's supposed to collect dust, but it's a centerpiece of their covenant with God. It wasn't just to be written on the tablets, though. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 6. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, we have a repetition of the Ten Commandments. In the very next chapter, listen to what God says. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. And you shall repeat them diligently to your sons, and speak of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk on the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up. You shall also tie them as a sign to your hand, and they shall be as frontlets on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. So, yes, these were written in stone, literally. But they were also to be written right here. The people were to take them to heart, to listen to them, to obey them, and to keep them. And the reason for that is because obedience meant life. Disobedience meant death. In Deuteronomy chapter 30, this is towards the end of Moses' sermon, as he is again encouraging and urging the people, reminding them of their responsibility to obey the covenants. He says, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 15, "See, I have placed before you today life and happiness, death and adversity, in that I am commanding you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments, that you may live and become numerous, and that the Lord your God may bless you in the land when you are entering to take possession of it. But if your heart turns away, and you will not obey, but allow yourself to be led astray, and you worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you will certainly perish." So, the Ten Commandments were kind of a summary of everything else God would tell his people. It was kind of the covenant in a nutshell. And obviously there was more that God wanted to tell his people about the sacrifices, about how you are to worship me and how you're to observe all these commands and everything that God wanted his people to learn about his holiness. But the bedrock of that was the Ten Commandments. In fact, the very reason that the people were sent out of the land, that they were led into Babylonian captivity, the reason God gave them up is because they failed to keep the Ten Commandments. I mean, think about all the ones that they broke. They worshipped other gods. They carved statues out of wood and stone to worship them. They committed adultery. They stole. They did not honor their father. They broke all of the Ten Commandments. Yes, there were other commandments that they broke, but fundamentally, they failed to keep the Ten Commandments. And so God said, I'm going to cast you out of the land because of that. So that's why the Ten Commandments should have been so important to them. It's because it's the bedrock of their relationship with God. So what about us today? Do we need to keep the Ten Commandments today? I think this is one of the things that I've maybe been wondering and been pondering more recently. I used to think that we do not listen to the Ten Commandments per se because they're a part of the Old Covenant. And so we are under a new covenant, so the Ten Commandments have been completely and absolutely all canceled out. And granted, the Ten Commandments, some of them, most of them are repeated in the New Testament. But I don't think that that's 100% accurate. I don't think it's 100% accurate for us to say that all the Ten Commandments have been completely nullified and totally abolished and therefore are no longer applicable. I also do not think it's 100% accurate to say that we must keep all the Ten Commandments today, because there's one commandment that is not repeated in the New Testament, and that is the one to keep the Sabbath day. And that's really where our big hang-up is, because the Sabbath day is not something that Christians observe. It's something that was something that only the Israelites were to observe. However, as a part of the Ten Commandments, there's a lot more to learn about the Sabbath day than just observe the Sabbath day. For instance, in Hebrews chapter 4, you and I are told that we must strive to enter into God's rest, which still remains for us. And I think that's what that command was really all about. But that's getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. So I want us to think about the applicability of the Ten Commandments today. Go with me, if you will, to the book of Ephesians, in Ephesians chapter 2. In Ephesians chapter 2, Paul talks about the Jew and the Gentiles in Christ and how the thing that divided them has now been torn down. There was a wall, and God has broken down that wall through Jesus. In verse 14, "For he himself is our peace, who made both groups into one and broke down the barrier of the dividing wall by abolishing in his flesh the hostility, which is the law of the law composed of commandments expressed in ordinances, so that in himself he might make the two one new person, in this way establishing peace." So if you imagine the covenant that God had with Israel as a wall, and God tore down that wall in order to bring Jew and Gentile into one new family. It's not like he was integrating the Gentiles into Israel. He was creating an entirely new family. The foundation had been laid by the old covenant, but it's an entirely new family. That wall is broken down. That wall is no longer there. Sacrifices are done away with. They're fulfilled. The temple no longer is around. We don't worship in the temple anymore. Those are all symbols and physical things which point us to greater realities that we find in Christ. But if we go to Ephesians chapter 6, do you remember how Paul tells the children that they are to obey their parents? Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may turn out well for you and that you may live long on the earth." That's the fifth of the Ten Commandments. So it's repeated for us Christians to observe that commandment. And he even says this is the first commandment that was given as a with a promise attached to it. That if you do this, you will live long in the land. There it's talking about the land of promise that the Israelites were given. But it's a principle that even Christians need to submit to. A principle is, it's a basic principle that God has always expected his people to observe, that we are to respect our parents. Yes, it's one of the Ten Commandments, but it's a fundamental, basic rule for life. And that's the point I want us to see tonight. Go with me also to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, Jesus gives us the Sermon on the Mount. And towards the beginning of that sermon, of course, he says in verse 17, Matthew 5, 17, "Do not presume that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but to fulfill." So there is a sense in which the old covenant has been done away with and it has been abolished. But Jesus' point here is he's not just scrapping it. He's not just tearing it up and throwing it away and saying, okay, let's start from scratch. He's saying that was the very bedrock, the very foundation upon which I'm bringing the gospel. I've not come to abolish the law. I've come to fulfill all of its meanings and all of its truth. And I'm going to show you what that truth is. And of course, we see Jesus fulfilling all of that. But it's interesting that as Jesus continues the Sermon on the Mount, he begins in verse 21, "You have heard that the ancients were told, 'You shall not murder.'" That's one of the Ten Commandments, right? And of course, the Pharisees and the scribes had abused that and taken that to mean, okay, you can't physically commit murder, but it's okay if you maybe desire to do that, or you're so angry that you kind of are pleased by the idea of, you know, being envy or being jealous, resentful. If you just kind of feed that mentality, Jesus says that violates the very law. "Whoever commits murder shall be answerable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be answerable to the court. And whoever says to his brother, 'You good for nothing,' shall be answerable to the Supreme Court. And whoever says, 'You fool,' shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell." So Jesus quotes one of the Ten Commandments and says, this is a fundamental principle that is a basic rule of life that we need to keep, even those who are in his new kingdom, the kingdom of heaven. And of course, he's teaching a deeper application of the law, the very application that they should have gotten back then, but didn't. It's not Jesus is raising the bar. It's not he's bringing a new expectation. He is teaching this is what God intended. This is what God meant. When he said you don't murder, he meant you don't even in your heart get so angry with your brother that you curse your brother. That's what he's saying in this. And of course, he goes on to talk about adultery in verse 27. "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Again, the heart is what Jesus and what God in the Ten Commandments was getting at. That our hearts need to be his. They need to not murder. They need not to commit adultery. So, it is true that the ceremonial part of the law, like the sacrifices, the temple worship, those things have been passed away. Because God has brought a greater fulfillment of that in Jesus. But his basic expectation for us remains the same. God himself remains the same. So while the old covenant has been eclipsed by the new, God himself has not changed in his expectation. So what do we learn from the Ten Commandments? Well, the first thing that we learn is that if you go back to Exodus chapter 24 a few minutes, we learn something about God himself. God himself is revealing himself to his people here. Remember, the very first thing that God says before he lists these Ten Commandments is, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." If there's one thing that they should have understood about God, it is that God had saved them. God had brought them out of their lives of misery and just awful work and enslavement, and God had brought them to freedom. God was going to bring them into a land of promise and fruitfulness and abundance, and that was all because of God and his grace. So God, in his Ten Commandments, says, "I am a God who saves. I am a God who loves you. I am a God who brings you into this relationship." He's revealing himself so that we can have a relationship with him. That's the kind of God that delivered the Ten Commandments. He's also a God who, in verses 4, 5, and 6, expects total devotion, single-minded devotion to him. Verse 3, "You shall have no other gods before me." Verse 4, the second commandment is kind of an extension of that, but it's listed as a second commandment entirely. "You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is heaven above or on earth beneath." In verse 5, "You shall not worship them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God." God introduces himself to them as a God who expects single-minded devotion. You're not going to have any other gods to serve them. You're not even going to make any pictures or statues that might represent in your mind who I am. You're not going to do that. Because you can't do that. You can't represent God by any fleshly, physical thing. God is the one that made the world. And so God has always been a God who expects single-minded devotion. Even though we're not under the old covenant anymore, that fact remains. God wants our hearts entirely to be his, no idols. And of course, when we think about idols today, we tend to think of those statues, those things that we don't see a whole lot of today in our country. But idols take a lot of different forms. Covetousness, in the book of Colossians, is called idolatry itself. Anything that we love more than God, anything that we place above God in our hearts or minds, that's our idol. And God expects us to only honor him with that place in our hearts. We also learn that God is a God who rests from his creation work. Look at verse 11 of the Ten Commandments. This is the fourth commandment that he talks about the Sabbath day. He says, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and the sea and everything that is in them, and he rested on the seventh day. For that reason the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy." We understand that God is a God who created the world. That's what he's reminding them of. And then he set apart a separate day to memorialize that, to enter into that rest. So you know, the obvious point of resting in the Sabbath day was you're not going to work, and your animals are going to rest, and your servants are going to rest. But it wasn't just that. It wasn't just a physical rest. It was a spiritual rest. It was a reminder of what God has done for you, is to remember God. And, of course, again, in the New Testament, Jesus brings rest. Remember what he says? "If you're weary and heavy laden, come to me, and I will bring you rest." And we're commanded, in Hebrews, to seek to enter into that rest. So we learn from the Ten Commandments that God is a God who rests and wants us to rest with him. And we also learn from the Ten Commandments about God's holiness, his holy character. All of these commandments they're not arbitrary. God didn't, you know, spin a bottle and decide, okay, it landed here, so I'm going to add that as a Ten Commandment. Or I'm going to just pull these things out of a hat. No, these things come from his own character. He is a God who does not lie. He cannot lie. Therefore, we should not bear false witness. He is a God who respects and honors life. He made life. And therefore, we are those that should not murder. Look at Romans chapter 7. Romans chapter 7, Paul is talking about the old law and how the old law revealed God, but it didn't fix the problem of sin. And in this, he talks about the holiness of the law. Even though it wasn't the perfect fix for sin, it was exactly what God wanted the people to know. Look at Romans chapter 7, verse 12. He says, "So then the law is holy, and the commandment is holy and righteous and good." Everything that God has commanded is holy, righteous, and good. Why? Because he is holy, righteous, and good. Someone once said that the law, speaking of the old law, the law reveals the lawgiver. I think that's a good way of putting it. When we read the old law, we read about God. We read about who he is. Remember what he told his people? "You shall be holy, for I am holy." And all of those laws were teaching them the lesson of what that holiness looks like. So God's holiness is revealed in the Ten Commandments and his expectations for us. And I think this is a point of application we need to take to heart. You and I cannot understand what it means to be moral or holy without God. Morality without God is completely empty. It means nothing. And that's the problem with trying to take religion out of morality, is you're taking a jackhammer to the foundation of the building. And if you take a jackhammer to the foundation, what's going to happen to the building? It's all going to crumble. The morality that God expected his people to have, "You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal," all of those came after the commandment to honor God, the commandment to worship God, and it was built upon that. So when we take God out of the picture, we're left with nothing. We're left with no really standard for morality. And one more thing we learn from the Ten Commandments from Romans chapter 7 is that every single one of us is guilty of breaking these commandments. Look at Romans chapter 7, beginning in verse 7. That's part of Paul's discussion here. He says, "What shall I say then? Is the law sin? Far from it. On the contrary, I would not have known to come to know sin except through the law. For I would not have known about coveting if the law had not said, 'You shall not covet.'" So Paul became aware of sin because of the law. Because God said, "You shall not covet," Paul realized, "Hey, I've coveted and I'm guilty of that." In verse 8, he doesn't blame it on the law itself, but it's sin that's the problem. In verse 8, "But sin, taking an opportunity through the commandment, produced in me coveting of every kind. For apart from the law, sin is dead." And so Paul's point here in Romans is not the law was flawed and it had problems, and so God came through Jesus and fixed all the problems. That's not the point. The point is that the law revealed our need for a Savior. And as we read the Ten Commandments, we realize that if we read them like Jesus did, we realize we've all broken the Ten Commandments. We've had idols. We've lusted. We have had anger. We've told lies. We've told all these things. We've said all these things that are violation of God's holy character. And the point of that is to point us to Jesus' grace that comes from him. And so while the law reveals our sin, it cannot forgive us when we fall short. And that's where Jesus comes into place. So one more thing that I think we need to, we'll close with this. In Matthew chapter 22, Jesus was once asked what the greatest commandment is. And when Jesus responded to that, he answered with two commandments. Not one, but two. Matthew chapter 22, verse 34. "But when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. 'Teacher, what is the great commandment in the law?' And he said to him, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Upon these two commandments hang the whole law and the prophets.'" These two commandments, to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, they together are kind of a summary of the Ten Commandments, aren't they? The first four commandments talk about our relationship with God, how we need to honor him and worship him and be devoted single-mindedly to him. And the commandments 5 through 10 are about our relationship with other people, how we honor our father and mother. We don't commit adultery. We don't commit murder. We don't steal. We don't bear false witness. We don't covet. Those are all relationships, things that change our relationship with one another. So Jesus says there's one thing that summarizes the whole law, and that's this word, love. Love summarizes God's commandments. And Jesus is not saying, you just love your neighbor and it's okay. You just love God and you figure out what that means for yourself. No, all the other commandments mean something as an expression of, they're teaching us what that means. Love is more than a feeling. Love is obeying God's commandments. So when the Pharisees put this lawyer forward, had and asked this question, "What's the greatest commandment?" I'm automatically suspicious of that, because it seems to me to reflect kind of this human tendency to want to simplify God's word in a minimalistic way. In other words, it seems like he's asking, what is the one commandment that I must keep and ignore the rest? What are the ones that I can safely ignore? What are the ones that are, it's okay for me just to kind of pass over, but what's the one thing that I have to do in order to inherit eternal life? And Jesus' answer explodes that thinking. He says, if you really want to do this thing right, then you will love God with everything that you have, and you will love your neighbor as yourself. If we love God with everything we have, We won't have that mentality of, let's boil everything down to one law so we don't have to keep the rest. Our attitude will be of complete submission to God. And that's what the Ten Commandments are all about. It's about serving God and serving those that God has made. So this evening, I just encourage us to submit our lives to God. Follow the basic rules that God has given us in His Word, in His commandments. They are the foundation of our relationship with Him and with each other. And as we look at the Ten Commandments and we realize that we have broken them, again, Jesus has offered us His grace through the gospel. He died for us because we could not keep these commands perfectly. There's no way we could. But He graciously laid down His life as a sacrifice. And so tonight, if you want to respond to that by becoming a Christian, or if we can pray for you or encourage you as a Christian in some way, why don't you come to the front and let that be known as we sing to encourage you.